is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and this is another episode of The Urologist Speaks. I have with me a special guest who is in the form of psychiatrist, Dr. Thomas Smith. Welcome, Thomas, to the show.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Dr. Pinto.
My co-host, Dr. Wesley Francis, is yet again stuck in surgery. So I'm here solo, and I didn't expect that, but let's soldier on. So we're going to talk about mental health in general, but we're going to stress men's mental health, and men's mental health matters. We have a society that rarely cares about what a man goes through. So men in the Bahamas want peace. They want a peaceful, loving, caring environment. And maybe this is a personal opinion, but what kills a Bahamian man the fastest is not necessarily diabetes or hypertension or obesity or even cancer, not even stress or daily pressures of life. It's being made to feel unappreciated in his own home, in his own environment. Men need to have a safe space. But men in general, they tend to carry the weight to the world. And if he knows the woman in his life sees him, values him, respects him for all he's done, for all that he sacrifices, then that means more to him than anything. That breathes life into his spirit. But the moment he feels devalued or disrespected or taken for granted, or he's constantly criticized, and Bahamian men catch hell from every corner of society, it's negativity, negativity, negativity. If this woman in his life is devaluing him, something inside him breaks, and a part of of his actual soul dies, his heart shatters. So men don't necessarily die, or will never really die from hard work. No one, hard work is not going to kill anyone. They're not going to die from exhaustion or from long days at work. But he cannot survive coming home to a woman who makes him feel less than. That makes him feel like he's never enough. Let's talk a little bit, Dr. Smith, about the negative perception of men in this society and the internalizing from even young boys of negativity, where your mother says you're no good, just like you're no good, Pa, where for every little thing, the reaction from grandma to auntie to mother is to beat the hell out of that 2-year-old instead of understanding why they might have acted out or why they might have done something. Or it's always violence, violence, violence. Everything, any interaction with their grandmother or mother is usually met with violence. And then when they become teenagers, that's all they know. If someone wrongs you, you go to violence, because that's all you're never taught to talk anything out. You're never taught to relay your feelings or seek help or anything else. Violence meets violence. And I think that's just perpetuating a very violent society.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Bindu. And wow, that's a lot to unpack there. And I think I sort of enjoyed how you are framing this question, because it speaks to looking at men and their mental health struggles, specifically in the Bahamas, in terms of how they are being impacted by their environment, right? And at the same time, too, if I am reading you correctly, you're suggesting that for as long as we could remember, for as long as we've been experiencing, what is being normalized has been chronic mental health issues that were never addressed and defined as normal men throughout our society, which brings about the kind of carnage that we see from substance uses, substance use disorder, some depressive disorders.
Men from all
violence,
all walks of life, yeah. They self-medicate.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether that's in the bottom of a bottle, or whether that's from in the form of womanizing,
right,
or gambling or any manner of distractions, but they don't seek help for the pain that they are trying to camouflage and hide away.
I absolutely agree. Now, I think how you're framing it, you said that, you know, they're devalued in a relationship. Sometimes their worth is not seen.
And when I talk about women in your life, that includes your mother. That includes your grandmother. That includes, obviously, your wife or your girlfriend.
Good. I'm happy you brought that out, because I was just about to just go deep into that. And we have a society that has been, for the most part, always, and rightly so, appreciating women's contribution, holding them in high esteem, but at a disadvantage of counting men for the struggles that they have gone through and survived, right? I think we are still a very conservative country, and in that regard, most people, most households, if they are headed by a two-parent family, the head of the home is still the dad, and the father, right? And so...
And what is even more tragic, if you're having the head of the household, and we're talking about mental health, and yeah. I always like to stress men, the problem men go through, because not enough said about men. They're usually at the back of the line. But let's talk about women, because this is a matriarchal society, and most households are actually run by women. The stress upon even the woman and the single mother.
Yes.
It's overwhelming. It's crushing.
Yeah, it is.
From financial aspect to emotional, to getting the kid out to school, to getting the homework done, dealing with the day in and day out tribulations of what your child goes through in school and in the neighborhood and everything else, and then trying to pay the bills and have food on the table and making sure kids are asleep on a decent hour. And it never ends. It just... a cycle of stress.
Okay, you know what? Let's pan out for a bit. And again, you're right, and not substituting one for the other. If we were to look at it holistically, let's say it's a village problem, right? So the old saying is, "It takes a village to raise a child." Fine, and but I absolutely agree. However, what if the village is sick in itself? If the village is sick, if the village doesn't have the positive things that are impacting on that child, then what you're going to get is a whole lot of compiled negative impressions on that child, and yet an expansion of all of the things that are wrong with society. So you are absolutely making the case for why it is important to stress that mental health is more than just being free from mental health. It's actually being able to be an active, positive member in your community, being able to withstand the stresses of everyday life, contributing positively to your environment, and fulfilling all of your individual aspirations. clearly, if the village is not supporting all of these things, then what you're getting is just an ongoing onslaught, repeated hand-down misery. And yes, the village is populated with men and women, boys and girls. And so where physical health could be easily spotted and seen, mental health is a little bit more insidious, right? And because we've normalized what it is to be angry, we've normalized violence, we've normalized feeling sad and depressed. And the thing about depression, why it's so bad or insidious and impacts on a family, is because, think about it, if a mom or dad is depressed, that means they're not really functioning in their role as a parent.
Well, that brings up a term I was going to ask later. What percentage, let's talk about men,
okay,
do you think are what we say functional, have functional depression or anxiety?
Okay.
Particularly when we talk about the COVID-19 pandemic and even the after effects of that, where everything was magnified.
Absolutely. So what we do know is that depression and anxiety are the two most common mental health illnesses or disorders within the world, right?
And that everybody goes through it. We need to throw away that stigma.
Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, CDC, that's the Center of Disease Control in the United States, they did a point prevalence, which is basically saying that about 9% of adults have depression in any given time in a particular year versus 19% of adolescents who report feeling depressed. Now, that's alarming. That's almost one in five persons at any one given time in a particular 365 days. You're going to have a stress level that is causing you to feel withdrawn, feel lethargic, lack of energy, feel anhedonic, feel like you are worthless, feel that you have spent all of your life in the doldrums, feeling that...
And all of this can manifest in physical symptoms as well.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Headaches, lethargy.
Yes, pain in the back.
Pain.
Yeah, chest pain.
Diarrhea.
Nausea,
yes, vomiting.
Yes.
Heart palpitations.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Sleep disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so where I know that for urologists, that's not my specialty, but I know that you would recommend seeing see their urologist at least every 2 years or so.
Every year.
See,
or exactly. Even every 6 months.
There you go. Yes. Equally as important is being able to have your mental health check.
Well, I'm going to say something that's very important. I think your mental health and your well-being are the most important thing in your world. No one's going to maintain that for you because everybody else is focused on their own. So not many people understand the strength that it takes to pull yourself out of a dark place mentally.
Right.
And some people stay in that dark place for years.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about what it means to have good mental health. So good mental health means that you are absolutely living healthy, right? It means that you have a work-life balance. It means that you have appropriate priority. It means that you have good coping skills to life stressors. In other words, when you're stressed out, you don't go to the barroom. When you're stressed out, you don't go to the next, the other female, your non-partner's house. When you're stressed out, you don't use substances.
Well, there was an interesting University of the Bahamas study regarding essentially sweethearting.
Yeah.
And a lot of what came out of that is not just the physical. A lot of men seek solace, comfort, positive feedback from the other woman,
yeah.
Because they are beaten down constantly by their wife, and the wife don't understand the trauma that caused not only their marriage, but for the household and for the children and their future. So what I want to wish women would understand about men is men are often fighting wars in their head every single day. And most people are unaware of it. So a typical man in the Bahamas is overwhelmed. He's stressed, exhausted, sometimes even nearing a breaking point. But yet he's still trying to hold on to everything, everyone, keeping the family together, keeping the home together, keeping food on the table, having the bills paid, having that school tuition paid, making sure that car is running, the mortgage is paid, et cetera, et cetera. But it reaches a point that if anything happens, and a lot of people are just one incident away from breaking or cracking, if he cracks, he's going to be judged for that. He's going to be seen as weak.
Yeah.
He's going to be seen as less than a man. So he's often afraid to open up because every time he does, he's told to man up. And that's what young boys, teenagers are taught. Man up. Yeah. Men shouldn't show emotion. Men are taught from an early age, never show any vulnerability. So men just bottle everything up. And until one day it's like a volcano, they just erupt. And then you hear why someone stabbed somebody or someone ran somebody over by a car or someone beat up their wife and their life has changed forever. Their family is changed forever.
Right. So you're right. I mean, I think what we need, the paradigm shift is to change the normalizing of feeling angry as a proper response to stress or acting out in anger because someone get you pissed off, right? Or perhaps becoming explosively and dangerously violent and passing it off as a legitimate reaction to a wrong that you have.
And then for many young boys in our society, everything that isn't positive in their life, the reaction from even your supposed loved ones in your family is violence.
Yes.
You failed a test, you're going to get beaten.
Yes.
You didn't clean up your room, you're going to get beaten.
Yes.
You messed up this, you messed up that, you're going to get beaten.
Yeah.
You never sit down and speak to someone and teach them and have them learn life lessons so, you know what, they can understand why they shouldn't have done such a thing.
Absolutely. And again, you're making the case for what I feel should be, a popularized mental health literacy training for the community, mental health literacy for key workers like teachers, educators, who are going to be the ones who see our kids at least one third of the day. They're in a very key position to recognize very early on the maladaptions or the early indications for something that might be emotionally or psychologically wrong. And they're the ones who can make key referrals to mental health professionals, providing them also with the support that kids might need. Parents should have access to mental health providers. Mental health services should be out in the community, like you mentioned earlier, developing safe space for specific people, which lowers the stigmatizing of mental health, because that's one of the biggest problems that keeps people away from the psychiatrist, you know. I used to tell the story of how I stopped going to the food store with my wife, right? Very early on, she and I used to shop together, and every now and then in my earlier beginnings of my practice, I would see, because, you know, mental illness is very popular, very common, out into people who I would see in my clinic. And being friendly and all, I would go, "Hey, how you doing, Mr. Whatever," right? "And how you doing, Miss Whatever?" And I would be shunned. I didn't get the reason why that was happening until it dawned on me that nobody wants to be known that they know me, the psychiatrist, okay? Not in a public space.
Yes.
And so every now and then I do go to shopping with my wife, but now I know the proper etiquette, which is I see them and I pretend.
Or not.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a weird phenomenon, but that's exactly how stigmatizing mental health is, which stops people from coming in. The fact that it's typical of what I'm saying.
Well, I like to look at life like this. When life shakes you, which inevitably it's going to happen many times throughout your lifetime, it always will happen. What you're carrying inside will always spill out of you. And what I mean by that, if you're constantly carrying around anger or fear or jealousy or hatred, that's what's going to spill out in the most difficult of times. But if you're carrying around love, kindness, compassion, empathy, and that is what is going to spill out when your life is hardest. So I always say, every morning you should ask yourself, what are you carrying around inside? And for far too many Bahamian men in particular, they are carrying around a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, a lot of pain, a lot of post-traumatic stress. And when life gets difficult for them, a lot of times all of that negativity just spills out and magnifies the problem and makes it 10 times worse.
So the thing about mental health is, and mental illness is a little bit different from other illnesses, right? To this extent, there are social determinants of mental health that impact your mental health, right? So what I mean by that is where you work can cause a mental problem. Where you live can cause a mental health problem.
Well, I'll give the example of even our colleagues in medicine, those who are on the front line in the emergency
room. Yes.
Whether it's the porters,
exactly.
Whether it's the nurses.
Yes.
Ambulance attendants, right. Paramedics, emergency room physicians, my own colleagues, surgeons seeing trauma. If you, every day you go to work, you're seeing people getting sexually assaulted.
Yes.
Stabbed,
yeah.
Shot, bitten, human bites. You right. See it all the time. Seeing persons made paraplegic by gunshots
yeah.
In the when they had their whole life ahead of them. One of the more depressing things I had to face through urology is seeing the number of young men, and I mean 20s, early 30s, who were shot in the back, spinal injury, paraplegic, and how I get to see them as urologists because they develop what we call a neurogenic bladder. The nerves are impaired and they're basically the bladder is not functional.
Right.
So it can't, you don't have any bladder filling sensation. Your bladder doesn't
right.
have the motor activity to contract and empty. So we have to facilitate some way, whether it's self-catheterization or placing a catheter or having a diverting urostomy to drain the urine, or you're going to develop sepsis or kidney failure or whatever. But the number of men that I see that were shot, I didn't know we had such a problem. And I can think, just closing my eyes, dozens and dozens of men who were shot, whether it was 15 years ago or 9 years ago, and they live their life in a wheelchair and they can't undo. And many of them were in gangs. They'll speak openly about it.
Yeah.
They made the wrong decisions. They were living by the gun. The only family they had, and that's a deeper problem, the only love or what they thought was family that they ever had in their life was in a gang.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if we were to, like, say, map out, like, those determinants, right, and say that's a risk factor. So if you are an inner city teen boy, right, maybe in a single, that's a risk factor. Just living in the inner city, right? Being a teenage boy going to a public school, government school, that is a risk factor.
Well, I think we also look at the other end of the spectrum. Yeah. If you're grown into privilege where you're in a family and you have all you know is wealth and the highest of expectations, you can't go home unless you get an A in every test.
Right.
Unless you come, there are kids who are collapsing and when they're in grade five because they didn't get the top mark in the class and they're afraid of the barrage that they're going to get from their mother if they go home and they came second place. That is a living hell as well.
Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, depending on...
So economics alone is some of the greatest loving parents right. are those who actually are in the inner city.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I didn't mean to... I'm just saying that.
I understand where you're coming from, yes. Right. But we have to look at the other end of the spectrum. Just Absolutely. Because you have... You have what we will say you're monetarily blessed doesn't right. mean you don't have problems.
Absolutely.
You might have a father who is away every other weekend and who drinks heavily because of the stress that they're under.
But he's providing, business. Right?
But he's providing, right. but he's emotionally distant.
Right.
Or he's emotionally abusive.
Right, right. And it seems that we never seem to be able to get the right mix where we're saving the family as he is doing, the sacrifice as he is doing, at the same time self-destructing because he has his own demons that he's carrying about the stresses of his burden, making sure that he's a good enough provider, a good enough father. He just can't lock into his emotional self to be that loving person or that loving character that he should and ought to be, you know.
I mean, the worst thing in the world is to have an 8-year-old define their happiness by their academic achievements.
Right.
To the point they're having sleepless nights or they have trauma in that they don't want to go to school the next day because they can't, the anticipation of getting the grade for the test they had the day before, it's too much for them.
I hear it. So that is true. I mean, and it seems very specific, right? And you are absolutely correct. Trauma can beset a child regardless of their environment, whether it's on the one end of the stream of being a high economic level to the other one that is not so...
And everything in between.
Oh, everything in between, right?
Well, let's take a call. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Pinto. Good afternoon, yeah.
It's Dr. Thomas Smith, psychiatrist.
Okay, good afternoon. Both doctors.
Yes.
Okay, good afternoon. Yeah, Dr. Pinto, I have a couple of questions to ask you.
Go ahead, please.
In reference to, like, depression, right? Could depression be, like, if a person who keeps you depressed, what is that person called, like, in medicine? Like, you have a person who has depression, but a person who really, like, keeping them in that state of depression, what is the term called or the name of?
I mean, I started off early in psychiatry and I was going to specialize, but obviously that question should go to Dr. Thomas. But there's so many different forms of depression. Then we also have to differentiate depression from just sadness that we all feel.
Right.
And is it related to a chemical imbalance? Is it actual depressive disorder? Is it a major depressive disorder? We don't speak enough about seasonal depression or where persons who are in the winter months... they may not see sun for many months,
mm-hmm.
or because of rain in Vancouver and Seattle, there's a high level of seasonal depression.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but my question is basically, okay, like to say you're in an environment, okay, like to say a job, home, or a relationship, or something like that, right? And to say in a relationship, your partner, she's like, you know, he didn't get this or that for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this and that to keep him humiliated and then the depression, at least in a state of depression. What is the term called for the person who would keep you in that state of mind? Do you have a term for that? I mean, I have a term, but I want to know if it's clinically right for me to say it.
Well, right. So, and that's an example.
Well, I think that goes to what I said in the beginning, that men need a safe environment, men need positivity, and men should feel valued and respected at home. And the most destructive force in this society is within the home, where marriages are breaking up, or relationships are breaking up, where women, mothers, grandmothers are berating and filling the men in their lives full of negativity, and they feel that they have no support.
Okay.
So that means, okay, my term of abuse for that person will keep that person in the state of mind to not be, an achiever, or to really look at life in a positive way. I classify that person to be an oppressor, a person who always keeps person like out of this, or basically hinder you. It's actually oppression.
So
regret.
So, as a psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
Being able to identify who the patient is primary, right? So if the person in this scenario that you've just painted is suffering from depression, that's the person that I would want to focus on in ways in which we can help build and support him psychosocially, and perhaps even medically, right? So, and that is by no means discounting the value of having a partner who is supportive. That is absolutely invaluable. And the point that you're making sort of underscores how socially or environmentally can impact on your well-being, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in a negative environment or a toxic relationship, it's absolutely near impossible to have good mental health, right? And so the first thing that I would probably want to know from this person, the gentleman going there, is whether he meets the criteria for depressed episode, right? And the severity of it. That would mean that if he is not sleeping, he's unable to function to the level where he's, it's impacting his daily living. He's hopeless. He's feeling guilt. He's thinking about life being, all those things, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the severity, then we can start mapping out how we're going to intervene. It might require some intensive outpatient care where he's coming in and getting some psychotherapy done. It might require medication. It might require an admission to the psychiatric hospital if he is thinking about harming himself.
Yeah, but you didn't say the most important thing. The person who is in that environment, the best thing for them to do, you could take all the medication you wish, but if you stay in that same environment, you could only go crazy. And on a different note, right, Dr. Pinto?
Yes. Right? Well, let me just say my two cents in regards to that. Life is short. There's no time to spend with negative people who are trying to tear you down. So surround yourself with positivity. And we look at life as you need to almost have like a diet. You need to shed the weight of the negative and the ugly and the hate and everything else, and surround yourself by positive people who are going to uplift you and inspire you and want the best for you.
So I absolutely agree with...
Hey, Dr. Pinto.
Yes.
And on the next note, I mean, it's like, so you saying surround yourself by these people, but how about just not being around anyone and be to yourself and delve into yourself and basically...
That's all important as well. If you're not happy with yourself, because, you'll never be happy with anybody else.
You know, because if you don't, I mean, like, in life, you know what I find? Like, people, they be about, from they reach the age of about 13, 14, and they're on the search of finding somebody, a friend, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, or somebody else to make their life complete. And I feel like that's why I'm a big mistake in life, because, you know what, in this life, we live in our own body, right?
Yes.
And the beauty of life is to really know your own body, know yourself. You know, and it's like we live our life and we look for other people to try to find out, and we get so disappointed with people because they're not honest, or they whatever they do will be contrary to our feelings and cause us to go in a certain state of mind, right? But the bottom line is, I mean, like if we take more time to spend time to ourselves and find the beauty of alone isn't loneliness.
Yeah.
It's a consciousness.
So,
but Dr. Pinto, yes. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, you always mention about the blood vessels and erectile dysfunction and the heart and all of this and that.
Well, that goes hand in hand with depression, with the beam and man and the psyche. He's not gonna be too happy if he has erectile dysfunction. But go ahead.
Hey, Doc, yes. I know, Doc, right? But I can tell you something, right? Now, so you never mentioned the impact or effect, like you say, with your respiratory system, if it's not up to that par, what impact would have to say on your disabled sexual organ. Because the mere fact, or even to say urinating, because you know what, this body, it operates on air too, okay? And if you don't have sufficient air, or if you're not breathing properly, you think you're going to the bathroom, you be urinating properly all the time? No, you see? So all these things are part of the equation, because in our stomach, we have a diaphragm that operates on air. That helps the urinary tract to basically function too.
Very wise words, and I'll always stress that good erectile function is a manifestation of good health, general health, and that involves good health for every single organ, that's starting from the blood vessels to the heart, to the brain, to even the mental state of mind.
Yeah.
So, yes, you are very right, and I appreciate your call and your thought-provoking words, but have a good night, and thank you very much. So yes, he did say some very insightful things. So you can't live your life trying to impress others. You need to try to impress yourself, impress God, impress your family, try to be a role model to your children, to your community. But there are always going to be naysayers. Unfortunately, this is a very negative society. There are always going to be people who are jealous, and there are always going to be people are going to tear you down. And if you let that internalize in you, then you're never going to get anywhere in life.
Absolutely. Like, I am, for me, you cannot find someone to pour in you worth, right? So it's just, it's one must discover that one has inherent worth. It's like gold, whether gold is in mud, gold is in water, gold is in any place where it may be somewhat discolored or whatever, the value of it is not diminished. The value of gold is not dependent on where it is. The value is intrinsic, inherent, right? You shouldn't look for someone to pour in you meaning. You shouldn't look to someone to give you purpose, right? That's something that should be done from within. Lock into who, well, when I say lock in, discover who you are, right? Get in touch with your spiritual self. Find purpose and meaning in being able to discover new ways you can change your environment for the better. Build legacy. Right? Find purpose, right? That's how you are able to build a kind of inherent joy to life, right?
And feel part, and you need to become part of the community.
Absolutely.
And you need to infuse positivity into others as well.
Yes.
So even the volunteering, that can be
big time.
That can help your mental health. That can help your outlook on life. That can improve our society, improve the future of our country. And not enough of us do that. And we're here doing just that. It's part of our community service after long days. I've operated all day.
Right.
Then went to office and we're here. But we're here trying to, even if it's one person, we can positively touch. It's worth the effort.
Absolutely.
It's worth the effort.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
But there's always a stigma of mental health. It's just as important as physical health. And I don't think there's enough, as you say, understanding that the education is not there. You can't call in sick because you're depressed or you're anxious or you feel like you had a post-traumatic disorder because someone tried to break into your home or your father died tragically 1 year ago to this date. But if you have physical manifestations of illness, then the community, your boss, your colleagues can understand. But they, particularly as a man, you gotta soldier up. And there are so many men in our country who self-medicate. They go to their construction job with a little alcohol. They go to their office job with a little alcohol. And that's the only way that they can make life tolerable enough to get out of bed in the morning, to soldier through the day. And unfortunately, 70, 80%, we're looking at studies, of persons hate their jobs.
Yes.
They do it to exist. Yes. And for many persons, because of getting down the wrong path and because of their pursuit of materialism, there's a lot of persons who get into debt and they just never get out of debt.
Correct.
And they live their life basically paddling, just trying to stay above water, and they never excel to the next level, and they're never able to even leave a legacy for their children.
Correct. I hear the music. Are we going to break? Okay, so they were saying some things, and I absolutely agree with you. What I will say is we need to really unwrap mental illness so that everybody can understand that it's not just a disease that you can just walk away from without having some sequela to it. It's not just a disease or disorder for old people.
And it can be terrifying. For example, if you have schizoaffective disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar.
Absolutely.
You may be perfectly fine until you're in the middle of your sophomore year in college or university and you just have a breakdown.
Yes.
Where you're hallucinating, where you're of suicidal ideations, where you have auditory hallucinations, and that can be that onset, and that's usually the age, is it not?
Yes, it is, actually.
And it can be terrifying to the family.
Yeah, and so the thing about it is that it can occur at any stage in our lives, okay? As young children, as preteens, as adolescent going into young adults, which is crazy because it's at that point where you are almost most physically healthy between that 17 to 21 period years of age that you start seeing the manifestation of these severe mental illness like the bipolars, like the schizophrenia, like the schizoaffective disorder.
And then we have to stress all the positivity in the world, and we both believe in God and try to lead the path that God has given us. But you need to seek help, whether it's pharmacological in terms of medication, in terms of therapy, in terms of group therapy, knowing that you're not alone. And it's, as you say, a village. We're raised by a village. You need the family needs to be around. The friends need to understand what's going on. You need a support group.
Yes, you do.
If you're going through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And far too many persons, families, when you have that 20-year-old who now has schizophrenia, they batten down and they don't want anybody to know and they don't seek support and everything else, and the stress of it all can almost break the family.
Yeah, so there are two possible reactions to someone who's a 20-year-old who maybe prior to the first episode was a very promising young adult, you know, competitive in school, have their future ahead of them, perhaps even the one single bright star of the family, right? And suddenly, at the height of their good health, physical good health, they're off in college and they're uprooted from their safe environment. And suddenly they have the first episode of a severe mental illness like schizophrenia.
Which could be terrifying, because for a lot of Bahamian persons of that age, they're usually away.
Yeah, exactly.
In another country. Yes,
yes. Yes. Which the stress of being in that environment can unmask that inherent vulnerability. Yeah. Because of the stigma, the family members may start having this, not wanting to share, closeted idea. And the other side, the other extent of that same continuum is that the families start leaving them without any support, right? I've seen both issues. I've seen families become so over-involved and protected that the end result is that they don't share, they don't seek help, they try to wish it away, and the child grows up to be, I mean, the young adult grows up to be without any kind of intervention, just pampered and just wasting away. And I've seen the other side where the same promising, well, another promising young person have their first episode on a scholarship, they lose it, and then within a year or two, they're abandoned by the family, they're walking the streets, they're homeless, and both are not the ideal reaction to it, right? And that's why it's important for family psychoeducation to happen. That's why it's important to have access to community mental health. That's why it's important for early intervention, because believe it or not, schizophrenia may not be cured, right? But it absolutely can. We have incredibly great, powerful medication that can at least begin to control some of the symptoms. They may not achieve...
But you can have normalcy.
You can have some degree of normalcy, right?
And you can still have a career, you can still have a family, you can still be a father.
In some cases, you may, right? And I'm being very serious. Schizophrenia is a mental health issue.
And there's obviously there's a spectrum of severity.
There's a spectrum of severity, right? So... Who knows?
And then it could wax and wane. Perfectly fine, and then the next you have police having to be called because you have to be taken to Sandlands, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that, I can only imagine the trauma of that for a five-year-old son or daughter when you see your father acting like that and lashing out. And even when they come back out of being hospitalized and they're back on their meds and everything else, you're always going to have that fear that it's going to happen again, or you're going to have that fear of your father. And that's a trauma that we don't speak enough of in regards to the family, particularly the young kids.
Exactly. And that's why good intervention would include not only trying to restore health to the patient, but actually educating the family how they can support them, educating the family why this experience, although very horrific, may not necessarily be a recurring one, and they can absolutely participate in ensuring that that doesn't happen by creating their environment that is not stress-inducing, that helps to support their loved one who might be suffering from that severe psychotic illness.
I mean, there's a high percentage of individuals of all ages, male and female in our society, boys and girls, teenagers and the like, who are dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. And that can be from many traumatic events, whether it's a divorce or a home invasion, home invasion, or a sexual assault, or... a death in the family, someone close to you, or the perpetual horror of your father beating your mother, and as a six-year-old you feel helpless that you can't defend your mother, and you don't recognize the monster you see in your own father.
Yeah.
So living with a devil.
Yeah, there are many, you are actually delineating the many ways in which our mental health could be attacked or under attack, and PTSD...
And it happens, and we even look. We spoke about nurses in the emergency room,
right,
and doctors, but look at the uniform branch. Let's look at those,
yes,
who put their life on the line and see the worst of society, whether it's the police or it's the immigration or defense force officers. They see the horrors of our society day in and day out, and there's not enough mental health support for them.
You know, I'm going to put in a plug right here. I absolutely agree, and this is something that I take very seriously. I am amazed that the uniform branch, the military branch, who sees sometimes society at its worst from gunshots to robbery to violence to all of the...
Or finding a murdered child in the bushes.
Exactly. I am amazed.
And what do they do? There are too many police officers who are alcoholics.
Well...
and that's a shame. We're not giving them the support. We are not giving them the pay that they deserve. We're not giving them the admiration for what they do for us. And we're not giving them the support when we expect them to deal with the worst of the worst.
Yeah, and you're right. To have that daily onslaught of horror and havoc and chaos and macabre in front of you, you know, I'm amazed that they do not have access to or should have like a program where mental health for them is specifically designed to meet their own specific needs, right? Because they need it more so than most, right? PTSD, you're right, is probably one of the main reasons why we may have those persons having substance use issues. I am not going on record saying that they are alcoholics. I'm saying that sometimes persons adjust to trauma by self-medicating and or doing maladaptive responses to the trauma just to make sure that the pain goes away. I am advocating for mental health services specifically designed for armed forces members.
And I'll say to you personally, I mean, particularly going through residency, the trauma I saw, no one should see. Yeah. I've seen the worst of the worst of the worst, where at one point I was in Cape Town, South Africa, then I went on to Europe, where it was a different thing, where you never saw anyone get shot. When I was in Germany, one of my profs was there for 34 years. He said he never saw a gunshot to the kidney in his entire career. And I used to see it 3-4 times a night.
Oh my God.
And that was the violence of society. But the worst I ever saw, and this is when I was in pediatric trauma unit, and it grieves me to even say, but this is how evil humans can be. There was this idea that if you're a man and you get HIV or AIDS, you can cure yourself by raping a newborn child.
Oh my God.
So to be there, coming from the Bahamas and seeing 3-month-year-olds or 4-month-old, even boys being raped, and we have to repair the rectum or do a diverting colostomy, and many of them have to awfully go on the antiretrovirals. It's a horror that sticks with me today.
I agree. Mental health professionals, male health professionals, see some of the worst situations that the body keeps the score on, and it impacts on your sensibilities, it impacts on your ability to function, it impacts on your psychological wellness. It changes you. It changes you.
It does. At the heart of you, it does change you. Oh, yeah. We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes. I would like to get back to your previous topic.
Yes.
You know, we have this musical chairs thing that happens on our police force every 5 years.
I understand, yes.
You know, what kind of impact do you think that has on the mentality, you know, of those officers, you know, who think they are due for a promotion, right?
Well, I'm sure it's heartbreaking, and it's very frustrating. And I think the even most frustrating thing is when they go through finding the criminals, have the evidence, and the justice system, the courts, let them down. That's even more frustrating.
But you think, I think we need to get some kind of legislation in place that separates our politicians from the running of our defense forces. You know, some kind of statutory board or group, you know. But you know, I think, it's almost as if the politicians have weaponized their supporters inside the inside, you know, or like, you know, or like wherever they are.
Yeah. So I think that could be one of the long-term goals, and
yes.
You know, you work to that eventual perfect mm-hmm. way. Short-term, or perhaps even goals that are perhaps felt and, you know, that have more impact on you directly too, would be bringing, providing you with that outlet, that safe space where, you know, you can vent and express your disappointment. You were able to work through your own personal struggles, where you may not feel so burnt out, so disregarded, so used up. Maybe creating that space, that wellness space, that mental health wellness space, mm-hmm. might be able to. You know, divert some of your just chronic disengagement, or, you know, that you might have, or perhaps feeling demotivated to do yet your best.
But it's like, you know, it's like you're on the airplane, you know, and the guy says, you know, if the cabin pressure, you know, if it's up,
yes.
you know, you...
Put
you,
your mask
you,
on first, exactly.
You accept yourself, right?
Exactly.
You know, but I think this penchant that this culture of ours has towards political expediency, it has to be addressed.
Yeah.
We do too much garbage in the name of politics.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I agree. Very wise words. I try to be apolitical, but you've sounded some very important points. But I just look even deeper. The trauma. We talk about crime and the police and justice system, the trauma from community to community, where you have persons murdering your relative, coming into your home, shooting you or shooting your relative, and 5 months later, they're right back in your same community with an ankle bracelet, smoking marijuana, hanging out with other hoodlums, threatening your children if you ever testify against them. And what is that going to do? It's causing a lot of good men to pick up the sword and seek their own justice. There's a lot of street justice, and we don't have the capacity. I've spoken to that before. We may have 100 murderers a year committing 130 murders a year, and we don't have the justice system and the capability to even put 18, 20 persons before the courts and have a date within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
So they all, every criminal knows, even if they get caught for one of 50 crimes they've committed, they're likely to get bail and be out in no time. And what happens is when they go in the Fox Hill, for the most part, it's a university of criminality, and they just get worse.
Yeah,
and
it's,
worse.
It's funny. You're right. It's everything does seem to be out of balance, doesn't it? And the impact of crime on our mental well-being, feeling safe and secure.
The typical Bahamian does not feel safe.
It's a real thing.
Day and
it's
night,
a real
they
thing.
Do not feel safe.
I know.
And we've become accustomed to drive-by shootings.
Right. And so I think... the long-term effect of this uneasiness, this feeling of not feeling safe, not only increases...
Which is a fundamental human right.
Right. It eventually impacts young kids who grow up with this growing anxiety of feeling almost always hypervigilant, looking over their shoulders, being very reactionary, you know, and...
I mean, a typical father, a good man, he's a good provider, he works hard, he does his endeavor best for his children and his wife, and an armed robbery, a home invasion, for the rest of his adult life, every night he's going to be pacing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Checking locked doors, making sure the windows are locked, making sure nobody's in the yard, making sure the children, and then the stress on him. How is he going to function as a father? How is he going to function as a provider? How is he going to function in his career if he has all this sleepless night and all this angst and anxiety and stress because of that? And then even worse yet, for the most part, no one is ever going to seek, there's not going to be any justice for this home invasion, which is even perpetuates and magnifies the problem.
Yeah. I may not have the answer to the crime problem, right? But I do...
Well, I think let's invest in our young people.
Right.
Let's prevent young person from becoming criminals.
Right.
And let's stop the onslaught of immigration where we need to make sure that we have positive immigration. I've spoken about that before. We have another call coming in. This is the Urologist Speaks. Please go ahead.
Dr. Bento.
Good day.
And your guest, Dr. Smith?
Yes, correct.
Okay, good afternoon to both of you. Dr. Bento, it's always a pleasure to listen to your show.
I try and I appreciate it.
And I really do appreciate you and your guests that you have and many of the other guests that you in the studio. But man, I don't know why men have a problem listening and being informed, educating themselves by listening. My career, I've been in this for more than 40 years. And I'm in the career dealing with men.
Well, I herald your efforts, sir.
Yes, and I share, and I believe I have a lot of information dealing with men, why I am in this business so long.
Yes.
But I was structured in a two-parent home, father and mother. My mother was one who believed in the whip. I'm talking to the issue of bottling up inside. But my father was different. He didn't do much whipping, but he was always the lion, quiet. But my father was one I feel more protected of. Sometimes he passed in 2001. Sometimes I get in the depression because I missed him. I missed my father a whole lot, along with his siblings. I watched them in conversation. They disagreed to agree. But one thing that I learned from my father, that I get angry right now today, persons accusing and never want to have a conversation. My father never let that happen to his children. Even though my siblings may have been wrong, he always wanted to know how did that happen and what happened. My mother was one. She's 93 now. We tease about it. We tease about it. Sometimes she thinks we love our father more. No, we love both. But my father was always one who wanted to find out how and what started the problem. And today, I have a problem with that. Even my grandchildren, I always tell my daughter, allow my grandchildren to express themselves. Listen to what they have to say. And I believe a lot of men are hurting and shut down because they can't express themselves. I don't know who makes some people God to believe that they have the answer. But even me now, I am over 70. But I was learned in a family where my father, we have a discussion. And even if I'm wrong, he want to know. He want to know who started the fight, etc. And he'll then take it from there. But a lot of men are suffering from that depression mentally because they just shut down, not allowing to explain themselves. I would like the doctor to speak to that, please. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you so much for your contribution, sir. I absolutely agree. I think you one of the very fortunate person to have such a prescient and wise father. Allowing yourselves and his children, the rest of the children, to have that time where they can absolutely speak to whatever issues that might be confronting them, whether wrong or right. And that's your father was obviously a man before his time, because that's exactly right. And not only does it allow to be recognized, heard, and appreciated, but it creates for them the knowledge that they are speaking in a safe space without judgment, without ridicule, without indifference. And that does so much for
self-esteem. Yeah.
Right?
And self-worth.
And self-worth. And it helps.
And gives them the self a sense of purpose and understanding of family. And
no wonder he, as he said, has been working what he has for so long.
Every child deserves a voice. Yeah. Obviously, there has to be a respectful voice. Yes. And they also need to feel valued.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this hour has gone very quickly. This is a series that we're going to start. And I thank you and for you giving up your valued time. Psychiatrist Dr. Thomas Smith. If someone wants to seek your services, how do they get a hold of you, sir?
So I'm actually have a weekend Saturdays clinic at the Doctors Hospital, Centerville Medical Center. On Saturday, you can just call Doctors and they can provide you with an appointment. And I am also I think I have another clinic. I'm just working it out. More details to come.
And your final thoughts?
Oh, well, mental health is something that is never going to get old. I take every opportunity given to me to speak about it because it's so important. And it requires restating and restating so that people can feel that, you know, there is a place and there is persons who they can get help for whatever issues that they might be dealing with mentally.
Well, my final thought is something I heard many years ago. It's very profound, and of course, I'm paraphrasing from memory, but what a wise person once said is, what surprises me the most about humankind is that we get bored of our childhood, we rush to grow up, and then long to be children again. We lose our health to make money, then lose our money to restore our health. By thinking anxiously about the future, we forget the present, such that we live in neither the present nor the future, such that we live as if we never are going to die, and die as though we've never lived. Have a very safe week, Bahamas. Let's be good together, and have a good night. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist. And thank you again to my guests. This is going to be a series of psychiatry trying to provide education for mental health for men, women, and children. Thank you again, psychiatrist Dr. Thomas Smith.
Thanks for having me.